Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Osiris.
What is literally going on? It's your dear pal, Karina Reichman. That's Karina, not Katrina. Don't put a T in my name, y'all. Don't do it. It's Karina. And I am joined here from the couch once again by my dear, dear pal, Mr. Isaac Sloan. Isaac, tell me something good, baby. What's going on?
Karina, I was just stunned when the airwaves between us fell silent for like several hours on Friday as you and your crew went up to the State Theater in Portland, Maine.
Sometimes, you know, it's one of those things when you are under great duress, to look at your phone only causes you more duress, you know, and I just had to remove myself from everything but what was going on in that specific moment. I'll tell you what, Isaac, we had some, you know, all's well that ends well. We had some incredibly epic, wonderful, triumphant, spectacular shows with the band Mo up at the State Theater in Portland, Maine. Really a beautiful time, a great band. We talk about them a lot. They have undergone a lot of personal stresses and, you know, hardships in the last few years. And for those who don't know, I'm talking about Rob, the bass player's cancer diagnosis that is now, he has a clear bill of health. And of course, the guitar player Chuck Garvey's stroke that he endured, I want to say about a year and a half ago, if not a tad more. But Chuck is back in the band playing his ass off. Rob sounds amazing. They are in great spirits. The music sounds fantastic. And they, not for nothing, love your girl Karina, and they're so sweet to me, and it's just really touching to see, like, all of, you know, these kind of older heads kind of take me under their wing and be so kind, you know?
Well, tell us about your rapport with these fellas.
I first met Al Schneer and Vinny Amico back when I was maybe 22, young, you know, freshly in Marco's band and playing what they call an everyone orchestra gig, I would say, which for those who don't know, is led by a gentleman named Matt Butler, who hails from the Pacific Northwest and is a lovely man who puts on a suit and a hat and directs a kind of bevy of jam band musicians through kind of guided improvisation, if you will, where we're up there on stage, not a thought in our minds. And he has a little whiteboard where he writes prompts for us, like volcano or funk in C or dissolve or whatever it might be. And we have to, you know, he shows the audience, he shows the band, and we have to musically interpret that. And it's honestly, say what you will, it is a wonderful thing. And in the sense of, you know, it's super fun. It's completely, you know, unstructured in the sense of like you don't go to this gig having to learn 13 tunes, 30 tunes. Like you're there, you make a shit ton of new friends, and everybody sort of gets to meet each other and hang out and kind of consort with one another, which is a nice element of this scene. You know, there's very little ego, and there's quite a bit of camaraderie, and there's quite a bit of, you know, playing around, you know?
Well, I remember at one particular Everyone Orchestra gig you did at the Stone Pony, there was the front man, Remember Jones.
Correct,
and,
correct.
Al and
Vinny.
Vinny from Mo.
For sure.
And you kind of, on the spot, developed an original tune called Bad Wine.
Which has stayed around in our repertoire. By our, I mean just Isaac and I here, you know, singing it to each other on the couch pretty often, I would say, right?
I think about Bad Wine a lot, yeah.
So this guy, he's a singer in this band called Remember Jones, right? And it was, by the way, there was some heavy hitters in that band. There was also Vernon Reed from Living Color, the guys from Mo. I forget who else, but it was a hot band whenever that was. And this gentleman, who's an amazing singer from Remember Jones, just came out and he's like, bad wine, ain't got no time for that bad wine. I work too hard for that bad wine. And we were like, holy shit, this song goes.
And in the true spirit of improvisation and collaboration, I believe Al Schneer and a few other members of the band just start singing along with him.
Oh, absolutely.
To these totally off-the-cuff lyrics.
There is amazing video of this, which is why we know it so well, right? So if you're feeling inclined, I forget what year this was, not all that long ago, but you can go, you know, you look up Everyone Orchestra, Stone Pony, you probably put my name in there, probably put Al Schneer in there, blah, blah, blah. You will, and you, ask and you shall receive. That is some good shit. It's honestly miraculous that nobody stole that song for their own use. Or maybe someone
did. I think it could show up in your set.
We've been talking about that for years. It really, I mean, you know, I'm going to have to ask Remember Jones for forgiveness there. Or, you know, we'll see what happens. But yeah, no, I agree. I definitely agree. But back to the Mo guys, I definitely, you know, have had sort of, you know, those guys became my pals sort of through that. And then my dear friend Lindsey Brown became Mo's manager in, I want to say, 2018, 2019. And then I played Mo down in 2019, where there was yet again, I think it was an Everyone Orchestra or just a big old jam. I remember being on stage with all of Mo. Like Rob and I played double bass, and it was, you know, I sort of met the missing links there, if you will, which was awesome. And I don't know, I've played, you know, I've opened for Mo with Marco up in Albany, and I opened for them yet again last summer at the Jersey Shore. It's one of those things where, like, when I actually rack my brain about it, like, I have done the Mo Fest, and I've played Summer Camp, which is sort of half their festival, so when you really think about it, I have done quite a few gigs with Mo, which is kind of funny, you know?
Well, also, tell us about the State Theater, because, you know, Portland, Maine, I know you feel very fondly about, and this is a very big room.
This, amen, Isaac. So, you know, I was thinking about this as well. I literally play Portland, Maine so much more than I play New York City. Like, in the last year, like what I just did over the week, like that was maybe my, like, you know, sixth or seventh show in Portland, Maine in 1 year, which is absolutely flabbergasting because it is 5.5 hours away from where I live and a very specific small town. You know what I mean? Or, you know, it's not a small town, but it's smaller than where we live, you know, and I have a particular fondness for it in lots of ways. I think, you know, the food there is exceptional, beyond exceptional, honestly. And I, you know, I've traveled far and wide across this country. I've got some miles on me, you know what I'm saying? This one restaurant called Eventide is my favorite restaurant in the country, and I hold to it. I really, to me, nothing gets me more excited than sitting down at Eventide. And I get, like, fully cracked out of my mind off of their food there. And anybody who's eaten with me there, which, you know, the numbers are rising, can attest to that. And the poor wait staff, just kidding, they like it because I just become very boisterous and, you know, it's a wonderful establishment. But honestly, just, you know, New England sort of vibe, but not Boston-y in its way. You know what I mean? It has like sort of a nature-y thing on the, like, there's a lot of lakes. There's a lot of, like, you know, and the town itself is just extremely traversable. People are incredibly nice. And there's another restaurant that I adore called the Friendly Toast, which has locations throughout New England, but one of them is there, and it's wonderful. And, you know, it's the type of thing where, like, we go to the Friendly Toast, and everyone who works at the restaurant was at the show the night before, you know? So it's a town that loves its music, and I love it, you know? And the State Theater, obviously, for me, it was sort of my white whale of venues that I have not played there, you know? And it's sort of like the big, that's, you know, Brandi Carlile came through town last week. She played there, you know? Big Thief came through town the week before. They played there. It's where the sort of bigger touring acts end up, you know? And there's a place called Thompson's Point, which is their sort of outdoor answer to it, which I have had the privilege of playing twice. But the State Theater was on the bucket list for sure, you know? And then, so, you know, when Mo asked me to do two nights with them up at the State, I couldn't say no for many reasons. So we were delighted to do it. And I'll just get down to it, Isaac. Night one, we had car trouble. I don't need to go too deeply into this, but let's just say transmission failed and we had to switch cars. And I owe it all my dear guitar player, Adam November. I'll tell you guys, he is the only person. And we, you know, usually when we go out on a longer run, we at least have a sound guy with us, maybe a light guy as well, depending on, you know, the length of the drives and, you know, how much I can afford extra help and whatnot. But for a little weekend thing like this, where it's just two shows and we're opening, blah, 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 we rip it just the three of us, right? Me and my drummer, Chris, neither of us have licenses to drive. So it all falls on the square and incredible shoulders of Mr. Adam November on guitar. So Adam, literally, you know, like a champion, dealt with our car malfunction. And I'm not going to go into specifics because it's too fucking crazy. But let's just say we left at 10 a.m., had plenty of time. Next thing you know, the snafu happens, the switcheroo happens, blah, blah, blah. We are ETA to the club, says 8:15 p.m. We are supposed to be on stage playing from 8 to 8:45. So I've never, like, my nervous system, my adrenals, my stress, like, I, like, we just, and nobody freaked out. Like, nobody was like, what, you know, but we just sort of, you know, I called the club, I called the promoter, I told them what was going on, told them to tell Mo, and they were so amazing with getting everything dialed in before we even got there, right? It was miraculous. They were, you know, we shaved off a shit ton of time to the point where, you know, we were white knuckling and just so scared that we were going to miss the gig and whatever, but we get there at 8:02. And with the help of the State Theater crew, we are playing at 8:10, 8:11, somewhere around there. And it was one of those gigs where, like, it just, your life flashed before your eyes because you were stuck in the car for 7 hours in hellacious traffic due to the entire, you know, the mix-up that held you up and then blah, 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 blah. It's one of those things. It's one of those things I'll never forget. And I still think my nervous system hasn't, like, quite recovered from it because that amount of just, like, oh my God, like, we're gonna miss the gig. Like, oh my, what is gonna happen? Like, it was so palpable and so screwed up and just, like, you know, I don't wish that feeling upon anybody. But then, like, sort of the way you feel afterwards when you realize you pulled it off, kind of flipping it in the whole opposite, like, whatever's going on with the dopamine receptors and the synapse, like, it was overwhelming, like, and once we realized that we, like, had a gig and pulled it off and it was epic and the crowd loved it and I did my mini version of this story, like, live, you know, they went wild and it was incredible. And I mean, can't make that shit up. And then the next day, it was relaxed. We went to this restaurant, Eventide, with Vinny Amico, the drummer. It was wonderful. We had a sound check, can you believe that? And it was dialed, and incredible. So that was my experience of it. The Mo sets were fantastic as well. Emma Durhack, you know, Rob's daughter, sat in, sang Spine of a Dog and Ramble On, which was awesome. And it was just triumphant to see the band sort of back together, you know, like with all, again, like Rob troubles, Chuck troubles, you know, health problems, all that stuff. It's amazing to see them, those guys, like, you know, the original fellas, back at it and like playing to a huge room full of, you know, people who are so ready to hear their music. So it's amazing.
That's incredible. I am looking forward to the show this Saturday at the Palace Theater in Albany.
Delighted. Cannot even believe it. I can't. It's going to look, I mean, you know, I feel like we said this on the pod, but we dropped Isaac off there to go see the Disco Biscuits on our way home from playing with the Disco Biscuits in Burlington, Vermont. And I saw the Palace Theater for the first time. And I'm like, I am so shocked that I get to play a note of music there. It's like kind of crazy for me.
Yeah, I know. And I really need to get up to Portland, Maine. I've never been there. I've been to the State Theater in New Brunswick, New Jersey.
Oh, wow.
But you can't really confuse the two. You know, I really have to check out the State Theater in Maine.
Sure. You're going to love it when you get up there. It's I look forward to, I'm sure, you know, we'll play there a few more times this year, God willing, and we'll take you with us. That's going to be great. That's going to be, I mean, it's a great town. So shout out Portland, Maine. I tell everybody about you. You're really worth the price of admission. I love you being where I play locally the most. Because it's not local to me, honey, but I love coming up to see y'all.
Well, speaking of somebody who played the State Theater in Portland, Maine last week, I saw Brandi Carlile at the Capitol Theater in Port Chester on Friday, the second of her two-night stint there. She's doing a little solo acoustic tour, and I love Brandi Carlile. If you're listening to this podcast and you haven't checked her out, I don't know what you're doing, but you should check her out.
Amen.
Because
Amen.
She is terrific, and she's really made a lot of music news in the past couple of years, and it's just so hard-earned. I mean, she played a lot of songs from her entire catalog, and she is one of the more sincere people making music at the level that she's making it at. And, you know, these were really stripped-down shows. It was just her and a guitar and a piano, and her wife Catherine sat in for two songs. But she was saying that she really felt, after Grammy season, the need to just be with her audience and, you know, really kind of celebrate her whole catalog. And, you know, it's just awesome to see your favorite artist in a format where it's just them.
So it takes so much guts to get up there and do it, and to do it the way she does it is incredible, I find. Not that I've seen it like in real life, but I can't, like, I've seen videos and I know that she plays both piano and guitar, right? Goes all around, brings out her wife, like, you know, singing her ass off, incredible songs, you know, and people know them and they sing them with you, and it's, you can't hide behind your band, you know, and you're just exposed. And she's exposed in such a beautiful way that I think people are really compelled by it, and as they should be. She's an incredible songwriter and an incredible presence, you know?
Yeah, and the way that she is exposing of who she is just really kind of a delight. Like, after the song Broken Horses, which is, you know, Grammy, I think won a Grammy, if not certainly nominated, and, you know, is a major song for her, was like, oh my God, the whole time I was playing that, I just kept thinking, I didn't realize how long this song is. And she was like telling the audience that she got tripped up about like how long the song was, and was just glad that when it was over, everyone was like still attentive and listening.
That's amazing.
And it's like, you know, like, I don't know, it's just kind of nice to be around a presence like that on stage, you know?
Big time, big time. Yeah. There's something very compelling about her and very earnest in her way, which is delightful in a world full of bullshit and fabricated identities and sort of, you know, flavor of the week stuff. You see somebody like Brandi and you're like, wow, like, this is a genuine lifetime artist who is so compelling. Like, I totally get that. And I've yet to see her. I'm so excited to see her live when I finally get to.
I look forward to you seeing her live.
Yeah.
I think you're really going to enjoy everything that she has to offer as a live performer.
Big time. Oh, my God. And speaking of lifetime performers and people with the catalogs of a thousand gods, Isaac, you also had the extreme privilege of seeing one of my favorite songwriters Elvis Costello on his New York residency just the other night.
Yeah, so Elvis Costello is playing a 10-night residency at the Gramercy Theater in New York City, which is interesting on a lot of levels.
Many, many.
First of all, he's really trying not to repeat any songs over these 10 nights, and on Monday night when I saw him, he hit over 200 songs that he played over this course of his 10 nights.
Yeah.
Then he's doing it pretty much the first couple of nights he was totally solo, and now he has Steve Naive, who is his longtime keyboard player in The Attractions and The Imposters and a lot of the different projects he's done, accompanying him for most of the show, which is amazing. Steve Naive is a total legend in his own right and very competent musician. But talk about not being able to hide behind anything. Like, they're just there working through this songbook. I don't care how competent you are. That is a extraordinary task. A lot of these songs he's never played live in any format, capacity, anything like that.
It's insane.
And it was an amazing show. I mean, it was 28 song set list. So he's like really doing the most here. Opened with Blame It on Kane from My Aim Is True, his first album, and just made his way through so much material, playing songs that he wrote or performed with the late Burt Bacharach, telling stories. He invited up the Imposters towards the end of the set and played the last part of the show with them, and then had a horn section including Stuart Bogey, Ray Mason, and also had a guest vocalist who sang some of his material in Spanish with him.
So cool.
It was very much a memorable show. And, Tonight is the last night, and I'm jealous of all who will be in attendance for the 10th of 10 nights at the kind of off-the-beaten-track venue of the Gramercy Theater, and not a place that I really have attended a lot of shows at in recent years.
Sure. I mean, it's kind of tried and true, but it's kind of not where you go that much. I know what you mean by that, because it's on 23rd Street. It couldn't be more central in a lot of ways, you know, but it's sort of not where you'd expect someone like Elvis Costello to perform 10 nights at all, you know. Very interesting. And he has 600 songs?
Over 600 songs. I had breakfast with our mutual friend, Steve Bender, yesterday, who, like, we were, like, a good 30 minutes into our visit, and he was like, well, you're never going to believe this, but I saw this amazing Elvis Costello show last night. I was like, oh my God. I was there, too. And he was like, I want to go back and, like, listen to all of these albums that I haven't really heard. And I was like, I had the same thought. So we are going through his catalog.
Oh, yeah.
It really is tremendous. It's remarkable how many songs he's written. And, he's coming off of this 200-plus song residency and back on tour with the Imposters. They're playing the Capitol Theater and the Wellmont Theater in Montclair, New Jersey, as the sort of New York area stops. But he's just carrying on with it. And I can imagine after revisiting all of this material, those will be inspired shows as well.
It's so exciting. It's so cool. I mean, the idea of penning 600 songs, like, you got to be, that is so crazy. Like, I mean, there's few things that are crazier than that to me. That's so intense, and it's so cool that he's just, like, every night, 28 songs, 30 songs, like, just getting it going over the course of 10 nights. It's really, I'm jealous. And, of course, tonight's the last night. And I won't be there, RIP, but man, I love Elvis Costello. I'm so glad you got to see it. Isaac, you're going to see yet another fucking legendary act tonight. You are going to see Jack White at Brooklyn Steel.
I am. You know, he has been on the Supply Chain Issues tour. I haven't seen Jack White in quite some time. I'm a very big fan of the White Stripes and the Rock Hunt tours. Those are my two favorite projects he's been a part of. But he's put out like three albums in the last little bit.
Sure.
And is playing some more intimate pop-up kinds of shows. And yes, tonight it will be at Brooklyn Steel. I will have more of a report on that next week, but I know we wanted to just talk a little bit about Jack White as kind of an anomaly in his own right. I think there's kind of a theme to this episode.
Certainly.
About real kinds of anomalies in the music. And he has captured the eyes, ears, and hearts of many, doing whatever he really wants and being an incredible guitar player and a very good songwriter all the while, but also, you know, kind of reinventing himself a number of different times, doing things like playing major music festivals and arenas and then playing smaller clubs and doing new projects and opening Third Man Records and, you know, acoustic album just came out.
Yeah.
You know, he's done a lot of things and also not really marketed himself for that reason. You know,
sure.
He's kind of distinctly Jack White all the while.
It's a really interesting thing, you know, this sort of incredible reinvention of yourself. And it's not even a reinvention. It's just a, you know, you sort of feel this sort of palpable marching to the beat of your own drum, doing what you want to do, having so much force of will and joy in what you do that you're larger than life within yourself. You know what I mean? And that's sort of kind of what's appealing to me about Brandi Carlile as well, in her own way, of course, very differently, and Jack. And it's really kind of amazing to see these artists who are lifetime artists. They are doing this till the day they drop dead, you can tell, you know what I mean? And they just do what they want. I know that sounds crazy, but it's just fucking, it's a palpable, amazing sort of force. And it's, Jack is kind of super emblematic in that way to me of somebody who's like, you know, I love those Raconteurs records, right? Love them. And you're listening to them and you're like, you know, the same guy wrote Seven Nation Army, like the same guy wrote The Hardest Button to Button, like, you know, and just, you know, and I Cut Like a Buffalo and like all of the, you know, some of those Dead Weather tunes are so amazing and different, and the acoustic stuff is different. And Lazaretto, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like he goes down the list in terms of just like making tunes that sound a little more like this, tunes that sound a little more like that, doing it with this assembly of, you know, musicians and that one and whatever. And it's an amazing thing to behold and to be alive in the same time as Jack White, you know?
I certainly agree. He also locks up your phone at the show, which I really love.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to my phone being in a little pouch that I can't open. He's really committed to music and you know, through the ups and downs and twists and turns. And that in its own right, I feel really makes him special and a kind of honor to see in any room.
Couldn't agree more, Isaac. Couldn't agree more. Well, we'll have to have you report back next week.
I look forward to that.
I cannot wait. And we should give a strong shout out to our mainest man, RJB.
Terrific.
What the hell, dude?
Producer of all things Osiris Media.
Not a doubt about it. Thank you, RJ. And we're just, you know, we're just out here so stoked to have a streak going here of Inappropriate Happiness episodes one after the next. Isaac, this has been a true delight, my friend. Thank you for leading us through all this amazing shit. Can't wait to do it again next week, honey.
It happiness.
Bye bye. Even pitch a tent. I've been jumping turnstiles, hailing taxis with intent. Do you need directions? I bet it's not where you
Osiris.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan, and this is the Corner of Gray Street podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.